This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Going to focus all of our attention on, well, not all of our attention, going to focus all of our attention on two topics. The first topic, of course, being Team Canada and the Olympic announcement. The roster was announced earlier yesterday. We're going to focus really the bulk of the show on that, and as well, of course, on your Winnipeg Jets. They lost last night to the Tampa Bay Lightning, led by Marty St. Louis. We'll talk about that snub, as far as I'm concerned, on Team Canada. But we get underway this Wednesday evening by going to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Transferring a call.
We welcome back to NHL Midweek from CBC's Hockey Night in Canada, a very good friend of this show, Kelly Rudy. Kelly, and before we get underway with talking about Team Canada, we're a few days early, but happy birthday.
Yes.
There you go. I was saying, Kelly, I don't know if you heard it or not, but I was saying before we get into Team Canada, we're a few days early, but happy birthday.
I did hear it, and I laughed, and thank you. I'd totally forgotten about that. When you're approaching 53, birthdays aren't a big deal. So, but I appreciate it. I think about a week away, something like that.
Yeah, if you believe your Wikipedia entry, I think it's Monday, but you know, I don't know how accurate that is.
No, it's January 13th, so I think it's a Monday, so I'm hoping I'm home.
There you go.
Yeah. How's that for an introduction?
It works for me. Kelly, we're going to start with the Team Canada roster announcement. You know, yesterday, obviously, you played your entire NHL career as a goalie, so we thought we'd start with the goalies. It was sort of pretty much as we expected. If you asked most of the prognosticators, they would have said Carey Price, Roberto Luongo, and Mike Smith. You know, in your mind, who gets the first start for Team Canada when the play gets underway in Sochi?
If Luongo's healthy, I think I lean towards him. I would think, though, that if there are any hiccups, which I don't really suspect, I mean, Roberto's been really good this year, and up until on Saturday when he made his comeback versus Los Angeles until he was run over by Dustin Brown, he was absolutely spectacular. So other than that, if there is a change, I would think that, and I think most people would agree, that it would be Carey Price given an opportunity. But I don't think we'll see any of those critical decisions until after the Finland game. That's her third game. That's really the first one. That's the real first test, and I think most people would agree with this also, that a team like Finland, not only because of their spectacular goaltending, but the way they play, and I think they would think this is a compliment, they play most like a Canadian squad, so that could be a real test.
Kelly, I'm going off memory here, but if I recall correctly, when you were winding down your career in San Jose, Patrick Marleau lived with you. Is that correct?
That's exactly right, and I'm glad you brought it up, because when people talk about it, I know Patrick wasn't on a lot of people's radar, at least in the media, and so when he was chosen, I immediately sent him a text message congratulating him, and I'm just absolutely thrilled for him, and he's deserved it. He has had a spectacular season, and I guess I am saying it because I am somewhat biased, but also just from a hockey standpoint, I've covered a number of games that Sharks have played, and he's been their best player. He's been remarkable, so good on him.
Kelly, it was obviously a pretty big shock to Canadian hockey fans that Marty St. Louis didn't make the team for the second consecutive Olympics, and he was here in Winnipeg last night. He had a couple goals, and he was visibly upset. As far as Marty St. Louis goes, why do you think he was ultimately left off of Team Canada's roster?
I have no idea. He would be on my team, and the guy that has had such a great career in the last 5 years, I don't believe anybody's had more points in the National Hockey League than him. Every single game going back before 2004, that when they won the Stanley Cup, every single big game, he was the best player on the ice between both teams. So I'm at a loss for that. I wish we were told more about that, not to the point where Team USA got in trouble, where they were a little bit too, I'm not going to say that, they weren't too critical, it's just too bad that it was exposed that way. Because St. Louis, I mean, that must be an unbelievably hard conversation for Steve Yzerman to have with his star player, and knowing that they're both really good people. And I think to a certain degree that's why it looked like Steve Yzerman was a little bit shaken when he had to speak yesterday.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by CBC's Kelly Rudy talking about the Team Canada roster announcement from earlier yesterday. Kelly, sticking with the forward group, if you had to pick one of the 14 forwards that were selected, who do you think was the most off-the-board pick to your mind?
Not based on play, but just by people not watching him a lot and thinking that his time has passed, have to go back to Marlowe. I didn't hear his name often. I was pretty disappointed by that, by the way. But having said that, when you don't hear a lot about a guy, typically there is some substance to it. So that would be the one for me.
And, you know, Kelly, on that point, I think when they had that Sharks line in 2010, Thornton and Healy and Marlowe actually had a really good tournament, but because Thornton and Healy struggled a bit, I think people kind of thought that whole line struggled, if I recall correctly.
You're absolutely right. Patrick had some great chances, not only in the gold medal game, but throughout the tournament. He's an excellent player, and, you know, he's one of those guys that sneaks up on you because he's a really strong guy, and he's one of the most graceful skaters in the game today, and he looks effortless, and so you kind of look at him and go, boy, is there more there? But there isn't, because he plays so hard. He's so dependable in both zones. And when he has the puck, he's somewhat like Datsyuk and Zetterberg and Taves, those guys. He just doesn't want to give it up. And when he does, he fights unbelievably hard to get it back.
Now, Kelly, we heard a lot about the defensemen in terms of left-handed shooting and right-handed shooting. We've talked about that on this show quite a bit. And I want to ask you, you know, your opinion in terms of it appeared that Mike Babcock was very much behind, or at least apparently behind, you know, wanting to have those two other left-side defensemen and a guy underrated player like Vlasic and maybe somebody like Hamhuis, who struggled early this year but is playing better lately. Do you think that has anything to do with the fact that he's basically had only left-handed defensemen in Detroit since he's been coaching there?
Could be. All coaches have their comfort levels with certain sort of things, and we've heard for many, many years a lot of coaches don't necessarily depend on lines but pairs up front. And so for defensemen, if you feel that left and right is the way to go in your pairing, then they've made a lot of great choices. I know that a lot of people watch the San Jose Sharks, especially in Western Canada, Western States, and so the choice of Vlasic was is about as easy as you'll ever get. I mean, I know I've been raving about Patrick, but Vlasic is his own star, and he plays a really strong two-way game, moves his feet well, can make a great outlet pass, and he's one of the guys that he just doesn't give up on a play, so he's a great addition.
Kelly, now that we know the 25 players that will form Team Canada, in your opinion, what are the strengths and the weaknesses of this team, and do you think they're a serious gold medal favorite?
I would say that I don't know if they really have a lot of weaknesses, if any. The only thing I'm not worried, I'm curious about the design of a team when you really want fast guys, you want to play with pace. And I know the U.S. has built a team in a similar fashion, but the thing that concerns me is that when I was in Turin, the last time the tournament was played on international ice, it was unbelievably boring hockey. And I stood on a riser about 5 feet away from the ice with Ron McLean, and I watched every single game virtually. And I can tell you that because the European teams are so afraid of being getting caught up in a chance for chance game, that they had no forecheck whatsoever. It was played a trap game, and they were just waiting for turnovers. And then when they got their opportunity and scored, then they're even more defensive. And I don't know if that's going to be the same thing in Turin. And I'm really concerned about that, because then it doesn't matter if you have speed or not. You just have to have guys that are not going to turn the puck over, and guys that are strong on the puck in the offensive zone down low. And I'm curious to see if the international sort of hockey dictates that with the ice surface, or if the Canadian and U.S. teams can change that theory.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, online, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by CBC's Kelly Rudy talking about the announcement of Team Canada's Olympic roster yesterday. Kelly, you know, we sort of assume that it's going to be Kunitz and Crosby together, left side and center, because why else do you bring Kunitz if it's not to play with Crosby? Who do you see slotting in on that right side of, you know, purportedly, let's call it the top line, although you could really have four top lines for Canada?
I'm just looking at the roster, and I'm wondering if it could be a guy like Stamkos or Carter, two natural goal scorers. I just wonder if those are the kind of guys you need that can find a role with those guys. You need somebody that's really confident in themselves so that they don't get to the point where they just feel like, man, I got to give the puck to Crosby. And with natural goal scorers like Stamkos and Carter, they know what their role is, and they know that they're best suited to take shots and not be playmakers. So those two come to mind because there are some other natural pairings that you would go with. So, but I suspect also that we'll see a lot of different line combinations. And for all of us that watch 24/7, we know Babcock isn't afraid of that. And he gets the whiteboard out and he's got all sorts of combinations going.
Now, Kelly, heading into the Olympics, there's always going to be pressure on Canada to win the gold. Maybe not so much now that they've won the gold in Vancouver, but there's still going to be pressure. And I'm sure that you saw Brent Sutter's comments after the World Junior Tournament, and he said that there might be too much focus on skills development, and on winning, and maybe not enough on skills development. Do you think the lack of success at World Juniors and possibly at the Spengler Cup and other levels, is there something fundamentally wrong with the way hockey's being coached right now, or is this just the pressure that's always on Canada to always win gold?
I think it might be a bit of a combination. There's no question that you go back 25 years ago, the Canadians were known not only for their willpower, but for their skill. And in the last 25 years, we've watched a lot of other countries get even, and in some cases pass Canada in the skill department. And so I think that when you look at this team, though, it kind of separates itself because there are a lot of champions on this team, teams of guys that have had Stanley Cup champions, international success. And this is a team built of really quiet leaders. So these aren't rah-rah guys that can maybe get themselves too charged up for a game. These are really quiet leaders that they know what they have to do. They sit in their stall, and they say only what needs to be said, and then they go out on the ice and lead that way. So this is a unique group, unbelievable talent, along with leadership and determination.
And, you know, final question, Kelly. We know you're at the airport and you have to head out very soon. We appreciate the time. Captain-wise, you know, people say Crosby, Taves, and maybe not so much captain, actually, as leadership. Do you think at all, I mean, there's a bunch of guys here who are, you know, in their prime years, but thinking back 2010, guys like Niedermeyer, Pronger were just, they got better as the tournament went on, and they kind of appeared to conserve their energy. Do you think there's any a little bit too young of a squad, or this squad's just the right age throughout?
Well, I'm pretty comfortable with the squad. I just love the mix they have, and certainly you're missing a guy like Niedermeyer, although you have a guy like Drew Doughty that will be known when he's done as one of the finest defensemen to ever play. In fact, it's a hand down for me. He's the best defenseman in the game today. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of other really, really good ones, but nobody does everything as well as he does and defends as well as Drew Doughty does. So, no, I don't really worry about that kind of stuff. I mean, these guys are so accomplished and they're so young with all those things they've done, and they haven't changed as people. They're just pretty darn focused, and having said that, all of us know this is an unbelievably hard tournament. Now, there are legitimately five or six teams that have a chance to win, and it all comes down to special teams, goaltending, and some luck. Somebody's going to need a little along the way.
The tournament gets underway in just over 1 month's time. Kelly Rudy from CBC's Hockey Night in Canada, thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Take care, Kelly. Thanks very much. You're listening to TSN 1290 online at tsn1290.ca. Let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the Winnipeg Jets.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on tsn1290.ca.
Minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Kelly Rudy, always one of our best guests, just so informative. Always enjoy having him on this program.
Drew, you mentioned his birthday.
Yes.
That's coming up.
Yes.
And I was talking to Richie about this before the show when Richie said that we'd be having Kelly Rudy on.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had him on his birthday.
That was a number of years ago.
When we were still on Red River College Radio. That mm-hmm. was about 4 years ago.
Yeah. Just wanted so, to.
Well, I know. Back. I mean, he's
from the illegal Curve archives. Is yep. that the point of reference?
Oh, it was incredible. Yeah. I mean, he's excellent. Always yep. excellent.
That he is. I'll tell you what wasn't excellent. That was last night's Winnipeg Jets game, and that was excellently disappointing. That was excellently terrible. It was excellently boring. But the skill demonstrated on the ice was about as far away from excellent as you could have gotten last night. That was just coming off of the Sunday performance in Pittsburgh where it was more entertaining. They lost, but it was, you know, all sorts of talk around that. And we'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets system or lack thereof coming up next segment. I would have expected more from the Jets last night than that absolute horrendous performance on home ice.
Right, and coming into the game, guys, they had lost three in a row,
mm-hmm.
and the Pittsburgh game was especially disappointing. The Boston game, they weren't really even in it, but the Pittsburgh game was disappointing because they had two leads in the game. So, yeah, there was definitely pressure on these guys to not only win the game, Richie, but give their fans something to cheer about, because the Jets, 44 games into the season, are quickly slipping out of the, 46 games into the season, are quickly slipping out of the playoff race here, and yesterday's performance wasn't good. I thought the best part of last night's game was probably the fights. Chris Thorburn and BJ Crombie had a good fight there. But as far as the highlights, the Jets only had two shots in the first period, guys.
They scored on one of them.
Two shots.
I know. 14 shots the entire game.
I don't know how that's really possible to only have two shots in a period. They've done that twice this year. But no, this is another low point for this team, and it's unfortunate. And I know Mark Stewart was visibly upset after last night's game, and he walked away. There's not much you can say at this point. The playoffs are really a pipe dream at this point because of the amount of points that they've given up here. And you can't lose four games in a row when you're this desperate for points. You just can't do it. So it's very disappointing. The players are disappointed. The fans are disappointed. Hustler and Lawless had a lot of calls today. There's not much that you can say at this point. We've talked about it on this show for 3 months now about what's wrong with the team, and at the end of the day, they need points because to get into the playoffs, you might need 100 points, and right now, the Jets have 43 points, so you're going to have to do the math. They're going to need a lot of points here.
Two players in particular I want to talk about from last night's game. The first, and Richie, I'll tee you up for this one, is Devin Setoguchi. He's benched for much of the game. He plays 5 minutes and 35 seconds the entire game, plays 2 seconds in the second period. He plays 40 seconds in the third period. He had 2 shifts total in the final 40 minutes of the game. If that is not as, you know, I mean, that sort of tells the whole story about Devin Setoguchi and his year as a Winnipeg Jet so far.
Yeah, 42 seconds more than he should have played. He's a passenger. I mean, I've called him that, but he's the passenger. It's unbelievable. I've a guy who's supposed to score goals doesn't do anything. Doesn't show any kind of grit, doesn't really demonstrate anything that you want a team to re-sign him. Playing his way out of town, maybe because he wants to, I don't know. But doesn't create anything if he's not scoring, which he hasn't in like 15 games, and what's he contributing? You probably know why, we mentioned it when it happened, why a team would trade a player that's supposed to score goals in their own division. Well, they must have known something. And, you know, sure, he's playing with Ole Oken, a guy who's not easy to play with and hard to score alongside because he's not a setup man and all that. Sure, all that, fine. But can I see some consistent effort? Can I see, you know, a hit once in a while, go to the net? How many nights have you not even noticed him? So I'm actually quite happy, with the distribution of ice time last night. In the sense that, okay, there's certain things I don't love. I mean, the fourth line is playing too much. But that's to send a message. So it's one game. I don't mind him sending a message. I would have liked it to happen sooner, but I don't mind him sending a message.
Him being Claude Noel.
Yeah. But Byfuglien's minutes are down considerably, even strength. That's a good thing. Now, he still is costing the team, and he's again doing giveth and taketh the way that everybody says.
Buff played 13 minutes and 1 second on even strength ice yesterday. Mm-hmm. He played 21:44 altogether, but only 13 of those minutes were even strength minutes.
Bogosian and Enstrom played considerably more than him at even strength. He needs to have his minutes cut down. And he was riding, you know, he's riding the Scheifele line, and they've been playing really well. So, you know, I mean, Mark Scheifele's development has been terrific, and you know, Evander Kane has certainly helped that along, as has Michael Frolik. But Scheifele deserves a lot of credit. You know, at the beginning of the year, we said much of what the Jets do will be dependent on Scheifele. Well, Scheifele's actually played quite well lately. He struggled at the beginning of the season, and you know, I thought a demotion to the AHL would have made sense to build up some confidence. They didn't do that. It's proved to be the absolutely right decision, and he's playing really well, and he's now gelling with these line mates. But again, as Ray Ferraro said in our show, it seems like when one line's going on this team, the other line isn't. And that's been quite evident. So overall, I don't mind the changes Noel makes in terms of the roster last night a little bit and playing time and sending some messages. I just wonder where it was weeks ago, because Setoguchi has been playing like this basically the whole season. Buffalo's been playing too much for 2 months now. And why now is it, you know, is the time? So better late than never, but still late.
And Richie, Devin Setoguchi was not brought in to play third or fourth line. He was brought in to play second line right wing.
That's right.
A very specific role, a very specific position, right? And he hasn't lived up to those expectations. And I agree with Richie, 100%. He probably should have been a healthy scratch, not just benched in game. He probably should have been a healthy scratch.
He has been a healthy scratch already once this year.
Just once.
Yes. For, so, I think, one game, and that was a number of months ago.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. I think it was either October, early November. We'd have to maybe check that. But as Richie said, a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that's when you maybe sit him out. And another player, again, and we're nitpicking here, but again, I look at, you know, a couple of things. First and foremost, Mark Scheifele, yeah, you can't disagree. He had another beautiful pass yesterday on the power play. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's developed. And what is he
developing?
Done? He's developing.
He's improved it on open ice. That's what
he's done. He's taken the opportunity. He struggled the first 20 games. He's taken the opportunity, roughly 20 games, as a benchmark. And he's struggled. And he's got two great line mates. Evander Kane and Michael Frolik are great line mates. But it's not just the line mates. He's really developed in season. And that's great. And that's kudos to him as an individual, as the coaching staff has given him more responsibility. But as far as Setoguchi goes, now he's playing third line right wing. So now Frolik was supposed to be your third line right winger. Mm-hmm. Now he's a third line right winger. And now you have a situation where, guys, if the Jets are out of the playoffs, which they're not mathematically out of the playoffs, but they're
8 points back right now.
It's going to be, I think we would say, extremely difficult for them to make the playoffs. So you have to start giving a guy like Eric Odell ice time. Why is he playing 2 minutes a game?
Because, I mean, the truth is, you sure give him ice time, you give him an opportunity, but at the end of the day, his ceiling is low. And that's the problem. They don't have many other alternatives. And, you know, back to Scheifele quickly. I thought at the beginning of the season, if he got 40 points, I'd say that. I thought that would be a really good year for him. He's on pace for just about 40 points. So that'd be a nice season for him. In terms of Odell, the ceiling, I don't mind the idea of playing more. You know, he seemed to struggle yesterday a bit, just getting the feet under him. And he hasn't adjusted to the speed of the game. People are coming at him quickly, and he hasn't held on to the puck, and he hasn't been that confident. I don't disagree with giving him more of an opportunity because, you know, see what you got. They don't have too much, though, and that's the issue.
How much can you see in 2 minutes?
Well, that's fair.
I'm not saying play him 15 minutes, but...
That's fair.
What do you have to lose?
Well, what's the alternative? I understand that, so and I appreciate that. But, you know, is it going to be the same old? I mean, if the roster stays the same, isn't it going to be the same old?
Well, at what point in time is this team become a seller? And, I mean, you don't have to answer that so much right now, but, I mean...
I still think it's after the Olympics. Likely.
Probably.
What today? January 8th?
Yeah.
The Olympics start February 7th or something?
Yeah, they probably have about
I think it's right after that. It's right around that weekend. And they go over. And then they come back at the end of February. So basically, and I believe the trade deadline is March 4th. So I don't see many trades. While trades should happen now, some people won't want to make deals before the Olympics in fear of Olympic guys getting hurt at the Olympics and then you're not getting a return for your investment.
They have 14 games left before the Olympic break.
Right. But Richie's right. Now is not the time to even... Not only title yourself a seller, now is not the time to move guys because...
No, now is the time, Ezzy.
Well, they won't, though, is what you're saying.
They're not going to, yeah.
I don't know if it is because now...
You get more return on your investment if you trade a guy now in terms of the other team who's going to be making a playoff run.
Unless you think Devin Setoguchi is going to...
Which playoff team wants Devin Setoguchi? That's the real question.
Well, I mean...
So then where's he going?
Right. Well, that's a fair question. But unless you think Devin Setoguchi or Olli Jokinen are going to get on some sort of hot streak and really drive up their value when the trade deadline hits, I trade him now because that team at least gets them for longer.
Well, the question
than
what playoff teams want those guys, because that's a bigger question.
That's it's a very fair point, and I don't have the answer to that, but we will obviously bandy that about a lot over the next month. Let's go to break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Winnipeg Jets system. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about that and whether they have a system or they don't have a system, as some have alleged. More on this. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek. You're listening to TSN 1290 online at tsn1290.ca. Having a good chuckle here in the studio. We're watching TSN 2. Is this one of the top 10s? I don't know what it exactly
is.
Top
10.
It's top 10, you know, hilarious goalie fights or something?
Top 10. Everywhere I look is a top 10 on something.
Right. So they just showed up Ron Hextall in the career penalty minutes, just under 700 career penalty minutes for Ron Hextall. That's the runaway leader, I would suggest, for goaltender penalty minutes. I don't think that's ever going to be anywhere close to matched. And they just showed a two-handed slash he gave to who was it on the Oilers? I didn't see who it was.
I couldn't see who it was either.
Yeah, he just gave him a two-handed slash that if he gave that slash today, he would have been suspended probably for 25 games. I'm not sure if it was a penalty in the 80s.
Ronnie Hextall is one of the best of all time.
Brandon boy, right?
Yeah, the rest of the Hextalls that populate the hockey world. The Winnipeg Jets system. A lot of talk after the after the Sunday game in Pittsburgh. Dejan Kovacevic, he's a frequent guest on Hustler and Lawless, columnist for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, quoted players anonymously on the Pittsburgh Penguins saying they have, quote, no structure. Another player said they have, quote, no real plan for what they're doing. Yet another player called them, quote, really just a strange team. Fair commentary that the Winnipeg Jets don't have a system, or is that unfair commentary? And the truth is, they have a system; they just don't play it very often.
I think that would be the more accurate assessment, Drew. They just have a system. Every team has a system, and the systems are all very similar. There are variations, but there are variations of basically the same thing. Maybe if Tanner Glass said that, and of course the player said us it off the record. If Tanner Glass says that, maybe it's different because he's been in the room, but we don't know who it was. I found it a tad interesting that Ole Jokinen, who gives the best interviews and the worst games, was talked about how, you know, the Penguins had a plan for every play. You know, they have a plan for when they lose a faceoff. So every team has a plan for when they lose a faceoff. So I found that a little bit odd, the way he talked about that, as if it was out of the ordinary. But he's been playing a long time, so I'm not going to read too much into that, but it did catch my eye. Overall, I think this is a story has been blown out of proportion. I think it's that the team doesn't play a disciplined style. They have guys who make stupid decisions. They don't play as a team all the time. There's certain things, but it's not a matter of not having system. It's not like Claude Noel comes out to practice and says, "All right, guys, let's just do some 3-on-2s and put the puck. We'll do some battle drills and that's it. And when you get on the ice, do whatever you want." I mean, come on, guys. Let's be real here. It's blown out of proportion.
I agree with Richie again, wholeheartedly there. And, you know, I know Kovacevic is a frequent guest of H&L, Drew, as you mentioned, and I didn't agree with a lot of what he said after that. First off, and I don't mean to say this disrespectfully of hockey fans, I don't think a lot of hockey fans understand when they're talking about systems. And what I mean by that is there isn't just one system. If you want to actually get into the X's and O's of hockey, there's probably 10 different systems that each team has. There's systems on the breakout. There's systems on the power play. There's systems on the penalty kill. There's systems off of faceoffs. There's systems in transition. So when you're saying, and again, you know, Richie just mentioned it, to say that the Jets don't have a system, and Kovacevic said this on H&L. He said that it was a veteran player that said it. He wouldn't say who it is. But he also said that that player had won the Stanley Cup, which Tanner Glass hasn't. So it lends me to believe. I'm not saying that one of the guys, Richie, because a couple of guys were quoted. It could have been Tanner Glass.
He's not going to say it is Tanner Glass.
I don't think it was Tanner Glass, but it was a guy who'd won a Stanley Cup. So, I mean, it could be any of those guys that have won a Stanley Cup with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Point being that I think it's a little bit ridiculous. I think what he probably meant to say was that the Jets don't play their system, either one of the systems that he noticed very well. And the Winnipeg Jets are a young team, I think the second youngest team in the league, and third year in Winnipeg, because we can't really judge them based on what they did in Atlanta, even though some of the players were in Atlanta. But right now, guys, there's one thing that is, and we've heard Claude Noel say it, we've heard Andrew Ladd say it, we've heard Pavlik say it, we've heard basically every player on the Winnipeg Jets say it, that they're inconsistent. If you're inconsistent, does that mean that you don't win enough? Maybe. It also means that your performance from a night-to-night basis is not consistent. And to me, I think the Jets have a clear system, but I think that one game they'll play St. Louis and they'll show that they can play a more defensive style, they can shut it down, they've done this on the road, and then they come back. And I think, again, getting back to that, and I hope that I didn't sound like I was being insulting about systems, but I think at the end of the day, guys, when you go to prepare for a hockey game, you don't pre-script what the game's going to look like and where guys are going to skate on the ice. There's a lot of, obviously, spontaneity involved in hockey. At the end of the day, that's what got me upset on Twitter, and everybody's talking about systems and all that. I mean, at the end of the day, hockey is about scoring, hitting, passing. Systems, I think, if you want to talk about, you know, what's wrong with Canadian hockey, I think, first of all, we're out-systemed. Richie and I coached 13-year-old kids at not, you know,
They didn't have a career in hockey ahead of them.
Well, I don't want to say that, but it just wasn't. It was at the community club level, but a high enough level that these kids had played AA, and parents wanted us to coach systems. Some of the kids couldn't even properly take a slap shot. Some of the kids couldn't skate backwards properly yet. And trust me, I'm not the greatest skater in the world, but I'm talking about, and now you want to put systems on these kids. At the end of the day, you know, hockey is a pretty fluid game. That's the word I would describe. You could watch a great hockey game one night, and you could watch a terrible hockey game like we saw last night. So I don't think you can just say that hockey comes down to systems. It's different to say that the players don't play the same way on any given nights. But this notion that the Winnipeg Jets don't have a system, Richie, is, in my opinion, ludicrous.
Would you agree that the Winnipeg Jets, whatever their system may be, they play into the hands of another team's system and quickly abandon their own system?
Well, that requires a systematic answer. No, I mean, they're not disciplined in the way they play. So when you're not disciplined, you end up playing to the other team's style and letting them dictate the pace. So yeah, I think in a sense they do, Drew. They don't play a structured game because they have a bunch of freelancers on the squad. I think one of the other quotes in there was that they're kind of a weird team the way they're put together. I agree with that. You have Oliokin as your third line checking center. That's not really what you'd probably think is your third line checking center, right?
Right.
There is a odd mix, especially on the back end. You have a ton of offensive guys who play pretty undisciplined at times or are limited in defensively. Guys who are trying to find their own identities. Goalies who haven't been very good and don't seem to gain any confidence from playing. You know, can't really gain confidence because they're playing in front of a team that doesn't defend well enough to ever give them confidence, but they're probably haven't played that well. And it's hard to get a gauge. These goalies, to me, are below average. But also, like, if they played in front of, I've said this before about Pavlik, if you played in front of the St. Louis Blues defense, I think he would be a far different goaltender than you're seeing right now. And, you know, we don't know that. He's not going to get traded tomorrow. But taking a step back from all this, another thing that you always hear about is systems. And this is kind of on Ezzie's point. You know, the Jets could play the same system today as the Chicago Blackhawks, and they would have likely the same results. Because as much as we talk about systems, what matters most is the players that are playing that system.
So talent is more important than any sort of system you put in place.
Yes. It is more important. The system can help. It can supplement that talent. But at the end of the day, you might see a power play that you love. And you say, you know what? The Jets should use that power play. Well, you don't think Claude Noel's thought about that? But he doesn't have the players to play that.
Sure, it's easy for the Pittsburgh Penguins to talk about systems because they have Crosby and Malkin.
It's easy to talk about how good their power play is and the system they use in the power play. Yeah, when I have Letang, Malkin, Crosby, and Neal on my power play, I could coach that power play.
We had Jeremy Weiss on 2 years ago. There's essentially three or four different power play formations you can use. I mean, there's the umbrella, there's the 1-3-1. I mean, there are only... I mean, you're not going to put five guys on the blue line. You know what I mean? Like, there's only
the
so many different...
The Penguins are a quick-moving, puck-moving team on the power play, okay? But why can they do that? Olli Jokinen can't quickly move the puck. He's not a good passer. So you can't put him on the power play and expect it to be a quick puck-moving power play. I mean, it's, at the end of the day, it depends on players. That's why when people are blaming Noel, and I don't think Noel's done a great job of getting through to this team defensively, there's also an issue with personnel. We've talked about it so many times already. I know people are sick of it. We're sick of it. But the personnel, too. I mean, there's responsibility falls on the shoulders of not only the coach, but the manager and the players as well.
Richie,
and apportioning that, we've talked about it on this show many times, apportioning that is a very difficult task. You can write a three-hour piece about that.
Richie, if you insert the way they play with the system, and by that, what I mean is the way the Jets play, instead of looking at that word system, because that you almost get that industrial type of, you know, a system is we go out there and we do this. Mm-hmm. It's like an assembly line.
Mm-hmm.
It's that's not the way hockey is. Yeah, you definitely have to have structure, and the Jets have lacked structure. But the way they play, and that goes to what Richie was saying about dictating the pace. Richie will talk a lot about that, dictating the pace. Well, are they going to play a transition game? Are they going to try to run and gun? Maybe the way the Jets play isn't appropriate for the players that they have. A lot of people say, well, why don't the Jets play like the Phoenix Coyotes or the Nashville Predators? I think the Jets have a lot of talent. I think the Jets are too talented to play like that.
I don't agree. I think that if they want to play a lockdown style like that, then they want to go get Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
And they also
want to get Zdeněk Mihalik.
They also want to probably get some more veteran guys on the bottom lines.
That's exactly right.
Olli Jokinen,
that's right,
for his 14-year, 15-year career,
Marty Hanzel,
has been an offensive center. He scored 90 points with the Florida Panthers. You can't expect Olli Jokinen, and sure, players have changed their style of play. Stevie Yzerman changed his style of play when he was getting older. But you can't expect Olli Jokinen, a guy whose bread and butter is scoring, to all of a sudden, at 34, 35 years old,
right,
be a third-line checking center. So as far as, you know, this whole talk of systems, yeah, sure. And I think Claude Noel, you could see he was frustrated with this. And I realize he's taking a lot of flack, and I think it's a little bit, you know, too much, to be honest with you. And I think right now there's a lot of finger pointing going on in Winnipeg. And I've always said it's a team game. So at the end of the day, it's not one coach. Sure, is the coach hired to be fired? Yes.
And by the way,
but it's not all on the coach.
Why do we need no disrespect to Dejan Kovacevic? I mean, he's doing his job, but like, I don't know about you guys, but was that breaking news that the Jets don't play a structured game or kind of an odd team and may not play, you know, maybe the system comment a little bit? But we've said on the radio 100 times over the past 3 years. Why is it suddenly because somebody from outside Winnipeg says it? It gets so much more attention. This is not rocket science. People who go to the game last night saw that. Everybody, all 15,000 people last night saw that.
Well, when they weren't asleep.
So they saw that. So why is somebody else outside the city who sees the team? You know, sometimes it gives you a different perspective because they don't see the team as much and they can be a little more objective. But you also don't need to be that objective about watching this team and seeing what the issues are. So this is not breaking news.
This isn't the first place team, and they're struggling and trying to find the problem. They are what they are.
No, but people know what they are.
Right.
I'm just saying, if this was written in the Free Press, it wouldn't have gotten any attention because we've read it before. It's the
right
fact that's outside, and people in Winnipeg are, for whatever reason, insecure about what other people say about the team or the city or pay it more attention, whatever it may be. When, more often than not, those people, well, again, they provide an objective analysis most often, have seen this team play 1% or 2% of the time and know far less about the team than the people who see them play on a nightly basis, which is the fans, the media, the management, and everybody else.
Let's go to break, and when we come back, we're going to start talking about a good team, or at least what Canada hopes is going to be a good team, and that's Team Canada's roster at the Sochi Olympics. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we shift our focus back to the Olympics.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour here. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Of course, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday, 12 noon on this fine radio station. Ezzy, you're giving me a finger point, please.
Well, you know, sometimes I got to take the contra.
I thought he was just telling me I was out or something. Like, you know, you're out.
Shout out to Constantine, or as you would know him on Twitter, at JetsXOXO. We have such great fans. Well, he's also a friend. But we have such good friends that he actually made us music. He's a musician. He made us all these instrumental songs. Pretty cool. I love it.
Is that what this is?
Yeah. He made this.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he made these instrumental tracks for us.
Oh.
And then he's going to add lyrics, and I think we're going to go on tour eventually.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Can we talk about Ezzy's debut on television last night?
Oh, yeah, we have to talk about that.
Yeah.
I didn't think I was going to be on TV last night.
So we're doing, yeah. So the TV, you got the TSN Jets on, you're watching the post game, you're waiting with bated breath for the Marty St. Louis press conference, which he said nothing, and obviously he was still upset. He found out the night before, so he was upset a day later.
Tough.
Yeah, and what a game he played. I thought he played a great game last night. We're waiting up there. We're ready to go. We're upstairs and on the TV, and you see Marty St. Louis getting a very serious look on his face, and then in pokes the face of Ezra Ginsberg, getting some national TV exposure.
Oh boy, Ezra.
Well,
Twitter.
It's amazing.
Were you trending on Twitter, by the way?
No.
He was when he did the Ezzies, but that's a separate issue altogether.
It's funny because last night there was way more.
Oh, man.
There were way more reporters in there. Like, for example, Gary was in there. Gary's rarely ever in there. Gary ended up leaving because he had a deadline. But there were probably 25 reporters in there, and I actually was stuck by the door.
Driving the visitor locker room.
The visitor locker room. So when Marty St. Louis came out of, you know, the shower area, I was right kind of stuck by the door, so I was right beside him, and I kind of had to. Remus was wondering why my mic had this weird position. It's because, you know, for people that, you know, haven't been in one of those scrums, you have five or six cameras that are right in front of the player, and then everybody has to kind of form to the sides. So I had to kind of figure out any way I could to get the microphone up there, and I didn't even know that I was going to be in the shot, to be honest with you. But anyways, people had fun with it, and I looked like an idiot as usual. So
I thought you looked good. There was a lot of people who said that you looked sharp. One guy who I thought had a very funny comment asked, you know, whose suit was that? Because there was no way Ezzy owned a suit. I thought that was a pretty clever comment.
I have to return the tux.
Yeah, you know, it was a rented suit. Ezzy rents a suit every time there's a Jets game. 41 times a year, he rents a suit.
Well, when he did the Ezzy's, he wore a tuxedo t-shirt and then a suit jacket.
Which was amazing.
Because my dad, God bless his heart, John, he loves the Canadian tuxedo. The jean jacket. Loves the all-denim.
All-denim. It's a good look. Team Canada obviously announced yesterday in Toronto. I think Marcel Aubu is still speaking, if I'm not mistaken. We got to start. I mean,
what was that?
It was a bad announcement.
I can appreciate, you know, the English and the French. That was great. But have one person speak. By the way, they know that everybody's at work. So everybody's at work streaming this or watching this on TV.
True. That's true.
And there's no need for this half an hour. Like, was the Minister of Transport? Like, why was she on there? Like, get Stevie Y out there. If you need to get someone like Kevin Lowe, somebody else. This is a hockey announcement. This isn't, you know, like a campaign for the Liberal Party in 2016. Like, let's go. Tell me who's getting picked here.
I thought there was a fair point that it was probably disrespectful to a lot of the other athletes who don't get any of the notoriety.
Nah, forget that. I'm more concerned from, like, you want Canada to win gold. So I'm more concerned about how these Americans or Swedes or Russians who are watching in Canada, either visiting teams or home teams, and thinking to themselves, get over yourself, guys, like, and then getting aggravated about it, telling their teammates, and then giving them more motivation. I'm serious. If you're another country, you're thinking to yourself, what is this? Just announce the team and get it over with.
I thought the Americans did it right. They had kids come out after the Winter Classic. I thought that was excellent.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, obviously, I'm Canadian and I'm more of a Hockey Canada supporter. I'm just saying, I mean, maybe they could have been a little bit more creative and with the way they came out with that. But again, I mean,
It didn't seem like it had to be a funeral that they were announcing over here. Put a little bit of excitement behind it, get some kids involved and make it that kind of announcement as opposed to the world's most serious announcement. I would agree with that.
It was too serious.
Yeah.
Lighten up a little bit.
The guys who made the team, I mean, you know, for the most part, you know, we sort of had our suspicions as to who was going to make this team ahead of time. You know, but, you know, I don't think when we talked about it on Saturday show, I don't think any of us had Patrick Marleau on the team.
Nope, but Richie was right about Jeff Carter.
Richie had Jeff Carter.
And not a lot of people had Jeff Carter, and Richie made his case for Jeff Carter. And then after the show Saturday, I texted Richie. I'm like, you know what? I think you're right about Jeff Carter. and he made the team. And I agree with you about Marlowe, but none of these guys didn't deserve to make the team. Even if you want to say Rick Nash is coming off a concussion and he's having a bad year offensively, he still was good in 2010. He had 5 points, 3 goals and 5 points, I believe, in Vancouver. So, I mean, everybody deserves to be there. But
that's the one that bothers me the most, is Rick Nash making this team.
Why?
You know what? I just don't think he's done... He hasn't done enough in the last 4 years to warrant him being on the team over a guy like Marty St. Louis.
And I understand the St. Louis issue, and I understand the Nash argument. I didn't have enough... When we picked our teams on Saturday, by the way, that was what I would have picked as my team. It's not what I thought the team was going to be, just to clarify that.
Yeah.
But in terms of Rick Nash, you know, what you want to think about when you're selecting a team or when you're analyzing the selection of a Canadian team is what goes into it. Who's on the membership committee in terms of the selection committee? So you're talking about, you know, Doug Armstrong, a guy who was in St. Louis with Columbus in that division for years, right? Playing them quite a bit.
Playing Rick Nash when he was on Columbus, you're saying.
Talking about Detroit. Okay, same thing, right?
Yeah, same division. Yeah,
but before in the West. You're talking about Kevin Lowe.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who's been involved in Hockey Canada before for many years and has seen a fair bit of Rick Nash.
Put the team together with Gretzky.
That's right. And you're talking about Stevie Yzerman, a guy who has a close allegiance to Ken Holland. And in fact, you know, it's funny that Yzerman picks the team because of anything. You know, Ken Holland, who is such a smart guy and such a great GM. I mean, he's basically, you know, that Detroit organization taught Yzerman how to run a team.
Sure.
So I think when we're talking about St. Louis, which we'll talk about, I think, a bit later and more in depth, but you have all these guys who have seen Rick Nash on a daily basis, and then you have Ken Hitchcock on the coaching. And I think Ken Hitchcock, a guy who coached Rick Nash, loves Rick Nash. And then, but they like his skill. They like his ability to create offense in the international ice and on that level. And he's played internationally quite a bit. And I thought that was a big thing, his past international time and success. But that wasn't the determining factor. Remember, I was saying this on the warm-up yesterday with Huss. Remember in 2010 when they wanted to match up with some of the bigger forwards who could skate. You know, Nash isn't the best skater ever, but he can move. And he gets going. He's a good skater. They wanted to match up big bodies in the neutral zone. They wanted to take away the speed and time of the other players. And what did they do? They put Rick Nash and a couple other guys on Alexander Ovechkin in the neutral zone. They want to put a big body on him. Don't let him get any room. So what I'm trying to say is these guys look at every possible situation. They look at every possible matchup. They look at the right winger who shoots left. They look at the off-wing opportunities. They look at the possibility of the cycle, possibility of creating that way. Size, being able to angle the puck from the right to the left. You don't think that you might not think they talk about those things. They talk about those things, and how does he fare in the neutral zone? How does he fare defensively? Hitchcock will know what he's like. Sometimes, you know, you want to go with familiarity because you're more comfortable with it. Whatever it may be, those are the reasons why. And Rick Nash, you know, guys, he's certainly not maybe been that player that people thought. The guys scored the most goals in the league before, and some will tell you that maybe he's not the franchise guy, but this would then be the perfect opportunity for him to succeed because he doesn't need to be the best player on the team. If he just does what he does with expectations that are, you know, below Crosby and below Tavares and below Taves and below Getzlaff, that might be the best place for him to succeed.
And I think Richie touched on it a little bit earlier there with Rick Nash. He can play both wings. Patrick Marleau can play both wings.
And center.
But, you know, as far as this, you know, notion of, you know, speed and size on the wings, you've got Corey Perry and you've got Jeff Carter. And so those are your top two right wingers in my mind. I think
Carter's the best skater.
By the way, I think, you know, Kelly Rudy touched on this. I think you could see a line of Kunitz, Crosby, and Jeff Carter. And I think that's going to be a very good line, a very dangerous line for other teams. But, you know, this notion of size and all that, getting back to Marty St. Louis, Kelly mentioned it, and I tweeted it out, and many people tweeted it out. As far as Marty St. Louis goes, this is one of the best hockey players in the league right now, and he'll go into the Hall of Fame as soon as he retires. He's a winner. He's got a Stanley Cup ring, 2 Art Ross trophies. I mean, everybody knows this about Marty St. Louis, but I still don't buy the argument, and I hope, and I'm not hoping that anybody gets injured, but I hope that it would be, I think, just really divine, if you want to use that word, if someone does get injured and Marty St. Louis is the first guy to be called up, because I think he deserves it.
We'll talk more about Marty St. Louis after the break. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, one hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Eddie Olchuk's on the TSN 2 broadcast. Did he ever bring the cup back to Winnipeg, by the way?
No, but he never won the cup.
He won in Chicago, like as a color commentator.
Yeah, that doesn't. I don't think that counted. At least I don't think that counted based on what he said back in the day.
We've had Eddie O on the show before.
You don't get a day with the cup.
When I was
broadcaster.
Either like sure? when I was about 10 or 11 years old, I was getting a blizzard at Dairy Queen on Grant.
Some things haven't changed.
Yeah, and, tell you what, this could have, you could be telling the story yesterday.
It was the summer, and I got Eddie Olchuk to sign a napkin.
The only difference is now,
and then I use the napkin.
The only difference is nowadays you would get a blizzard in the winter because there's nobody around to tell you, no, Ezra, you shouldn't have a blizzard for dinner.
Yeah.
Points per game basis, Rick Nash is 47th in the NHL among Canadian forwards. He is 90th.
You don't pick the team only based on points, Drew.
I know they don't, but it does say something. He's 90th in the NHL in scoring among Canadian forwards. 90th. How is Marty St. Louis not on this team? That's the biggest snub in my mind, in my opinion. That is the biggest snub on this team, is the absence of Marty St. Louis.
Yep. How can you argue with that?
Yeah, that's one I don't get. I'm surprised by it.
I got a good question for you, Richie. I know you were about to say something there. I'm just going to cut you off because this actually might be a little bit thought-provoking. Which snub
It's not about it's not about Dairy Queen blizzards, are they?
Which snub was bigger, Bobby Ryan on Team USA or Marty St. Louis on Team Canada?
You should be the one in charge of the show pun. Forget Drew.
I don't know the
answer. Drew's mic off, Remus.
I am quite willing to give it up.
Just cut it off. There we go. All right, so let's get back to it, Izzy. It's a great question. And the question was, you know, who's a bigger snub? I think the bigger snub still is Bobby Ryan, because as much as the U.S. depth has improved over time, it's still not up to the level of Team Canada. And Rick Nash is, you know, probably still, I mean, you know, you're talking about Rick Nash and whether it's the validity of him being named to a roster, and the guy can be a dominating force at times. You know, he's not going to be the franchise player, I don't think, and he doesn't necessarily make his teammates that much better all the time. But Eric DeHatchick had a good point. Before I get back to the St. Louis issue, Eric DeHatchick had a great article in the Globe and Mail, and the basic premise of the article was this. You know, we will rehash the roster selection. We will talk about the depth defenseman, and we will talk about the 14th forward. And they will, and to me, they will all be very important. But at the end of the day, what's most important is whether the best players perform at their very best. And I think that was certainly evident in the 2010 Olympics, when Pronger and Niedermayer became a lot, improved throughout the tournament. Doughty and Keith took over the tournament, as far as I was concerned,
yep.
On the back end. Crosby ended up scoring the big goal, but guys like Iginla turned it on. Guys who had been there before did a great job. So, and you know, Taves really turned it on. So there will be guys at the bottom of the roster who have a determinative effect on whether or not the Team Canada wins gold. But at the end of the day, it's got to be your Carey Price or Luongo,
yep.
your big four on the back end, Weber too. And your core forwards. But in terms of St. Louis, I'm surprised he's not on the roster, and I wonder why he's not on the roster. Like, if I think about the other players that were on the roster, you know, Couture, I also wonder why, but the injury, I think, probably had an effect on that, you know. But Couture, you know, two-way player, you could argue, is better than Marlowe, but Marlowe's a very good player. Mike Richards, I think there was an issue, and Daryl Sutter spoke about this, an issue with the big ice, I think, skating-wise. He's not the best skater. And I think the bigger issue, I had him on my team, but I think the bigger issue was the fact that he had to play wing. And Daryl Sutter said, you know, the guy doesn't play wing. He hasn't played wing. And I believe he played wing with Taves and Morrow a period that those lines changed, but in 2010. But the unfamiliarity, especially with the fact that it's on big ice, would have been an issue. And so that's why I think so I can go through the roster and say, okay, you know, I know why that guy didn't make it. I know Dan Boyle isn't a defenseman he once was, can get caught up offensively a little bit. The right side, just Subban's ahead of him, so they wanted 4-4, 4-left, 4-right. It's not going to happen. Look at some other guys, I can see the reason why. The St. Louis is probably the only guy I can see I wonder why he wasn't on the roster.
Richie, we were talking about this off air. You know, in 1998, Rob Zamaner was put on the team, and a guy, a pretty good hockey player named Marc Messier, mm-hmm. was left off the team. Now, so this is what I'm saying is maybe this is nothing new. As far as Canada, and this goes back to what we were talking about with Kelly Rudy last hour, you know, there's always going to be pressure on Team Canada, but to me, this team was picked specifically, and they're not going to say this. Eric Duhatchek, who Richie mentioned, wrote the article today in the Globe and Mail about the team, obviously. This team absolutely is geared toward beating the Russians. And I realize that there are other...
I think it's geared toward every team.
I think that you obviously aren't mm-hmm. going to completely, you know, make your team to compete against one team.
Right, right.
What I'm saying is Russia, home ice, is going to be the favorite. That's just my opinion. And I think that, sure, the U.S. is good, Sweden's good, even the Czechs and Slovaks are good. Don't want to forget about anybody, Finland, anybody. All these teams have good players.
Russia's defense is terrible.
Russia's defense has
Russia
issues,
didn't take
and,
their
Russia
best players.
And Russia has issues in goal as well.
Yeah.
So you look at the team, and how is this team a little bit different? You mentioned Brendan Morrow, and in the past, remember the international grind line? You had Chris Draper and Kirk Maltby. A guy like Mike Richards or a guy like Milan Lucic or a guy like Brad Marchand was left off the team. You have veterans. You have two-way players, Bergeron is one of those gritty guys. Marlowe is one of those gritty guys. But to me, this team, as Richie mentioned, and they've overanalyzed probably every single player that was in consideration, you have to be fast, and skating cannot be an issue because this is all about offense. At the end of the day, yes, it will come down to goaltending, but if they're going to roll out four lines, and it's four scoring lines, really. Yeah, you're going to have a checking line.
That's true. But checking line can score.
But
you're right.
When you're talking about Canada's checking line, you're talking about possibly Jamie Benn, Ryan Getzlaff, and Corey Perry.
Uh-huh.
That's your checking line?
Uh-huh.
Those are three of the best scorers in the world right now. So, I mean, all four lines are checking. And
I'm interested to see where Duchesne slots in. So if I think of the Lions, you know.
We're going
to
talk about the Lions next segment.
Okay.
But, but still with one other snub. And I don't recall yours, but Joel, you'll remind me. Richie, you and I both had Eric Staal on this team.
Oh, no, he was
on
my team.
He was on your team as well.
I actually had a big thing on Twitter about that. To me, Eric Staal, people are saying, oh, he's not. Have people watched Eric Staal play? He's still one of the best players in the world. He's on a very weak team in Carolina. And I realize Carolina's sticking around there in a weak Eastern Conference. But to me, you can't say that skating or any of this. Eric Staal, to me, Richie, was one of those guys that was going to have to play wing. And when you have Corey Perry, Jeff Carter, Rick Nash, you know, possibly Matt Duchesne. No, Matt Duchesne will play wing most likely. It was a numbers game. And I think Eric Staal deserves to be there, but I think that he was one of those guys that was just squeezed out by other talented guys.
And for guys that had a poor year, quote-unquote, 35 points, 42 games, he's still putting up points. But, you know, Eric Staal is one of those guys where you see him a couple nights and you're like, oh, you know, he could give more, not effort-wise, but performance-wise. And then some nights you see him and you say, wow, that's a dynamic player. And maybe, you know, consistency being a bit of an issue there, and certainly he'd perform well, but I think Ezzy nailed it there. And that's why it gets, when we talk about every player, I think there's a reason. The St. Louis one's the one I can't really find one, or at least one that I think is, I'll say logical, but convincing would probably be a better word. You know, Staal is a guy who center, who has to play wing. Okay, how does he play wing as compared to other players? And will he be as consistent? And what can he do? And can he create for others? Will he be a scorer? So he can do all those things. I had him on the team. I thought he would have been a great addition. But I'm not appalled that he's not on the team by any means. He was pretty upset about it. I read his comments. He was very frustrated. And, you don't want to be too strong in your comments because if there are injuries.
Yeah.
Well, and Staal's 28, 29 years old. It's not like he can't play again for Team Canada.
Right.
The sad thing, Drew, about Marty St. Louis is
that's right.
We're expecting there to be a World Cup. Is Marty St. Louis still playing? I bet he will be, and he should be there. Was he not on the 2004 World Cup team?
He was.
Yep. So a guy like Marty St. Louis, it doesn't mean that he's not going to represent Team Canada again, but it unfortunately looks like unless he is chosen as a reserve player, meaning subbing in for an injured player, it probably means he won't play in the Olympics again. And someone like that, who's really accomplished everything, who wasn't on the 2010 team, that's why it really stung for
him. I guess the question is, in terms of St. Louis, is, you know, they talked about him struggling in 2006. I mean, that is, you know, 8 years ago, so how much of an effect does that have? But, you know, coaches have long memories. His game is...
He wasn't the same player in 2006. He's a better player now than he was in 2006, I would say.
Different player. More older.
I don't know.
But I mean, he won the Art Ross
he's
in 2004.
Wiser, like, so. All, you know, all guys are, but he was probably at the prime of his career then. Drew, his game is a give-and-go game. His game is a steam game and great vision and a willingness to do, you know, whatever it takes, and he works hard and all that stuff. Not the biggest guy, we know that, but that certainly hasn't held him back in terms of career accomplishments. But I have a feeling that the way they want to play, his game's a little bit different than that in the way that he wants to play. And that's one of the reasons I think they didn't pick him. That doesn't mean that, again, I said I would have had him on the team, but that, breaking it down that way, I think that they were wondering how he would fare in terms of the style he plays with the other guys on the squad. And his game is a little bit different than the kind of the Getzlaff Perry game. It's a little bit more east-west than the Taves game. I'm talking about centers he'd play with. Is a little bit more complicated than they probably want with the Bergeron kind of guy, probably. Then you get to Crosby, and what his game... I thought his game would work with Crosby, but maybe they don't think his game would work, or more, maybe more specifically, they want Kunitz on the left side and a sniper on the right side. So this is how it is. You get a squeeze, right? You're a right winger, and you got Perry, as he mentioned, and you got Nash, and you know, then you're talking about 1-2 spots, and you're talking about competing between other 80-90 point guys. That's what happens. And yep. So at the end of the day, you can't go wrong with the roster.
Is he your first choice if there's an injury, or does it depend on who
exactly.
gets injured?
It's a simple question, but it's a complicated answer. If Rick Nash gets hurt, yeah, St. Louis is there. You're going to play the right side. If Jonathan Toews gets hurt, he's not going to make the team for Jonathan Toews. You know, it'll depend on who's injured and what position they play.
And of course, we hope nobody's injured, but there's still a month of NHL games to go before that's finally determined. You're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. When we come back, we're going to look at our projected forward lines for Team Canada.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past 7 p.m. The last cold Wednesday, from what I understand. I think the weather is supposed to break and we can get out of this penguin-killing deep freeze, finally. Supposed to be nice weather, CTV Sky News weather report. Sky Watch weather report, I believe, says that the weather's going to improve, so that's always good. That's a good thing. I think we've put in paid our penance for this weather over the last 5 weeks.
Are you the new Terry Apostle?
Anyways, I don't think so, but that's a good line anyways.
Sylvia Kuzik?
The forward lines for Team Canada. Let's start with the top line, the Crosby line. Whether or not it's the top line, it's you know, regardless. But
imagine you tell Sidney Crosby you're not on the top line.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's why Crosby's going to be the captain of this team, just because he almost has to by default. Whether or not you think he's the best leader or Jonathan Toews is the best leader, they're both going to, you know, take a leadership role. It's just a matter of a C versus an A, and I don't think it's that significant.
And they're fond of each other too.
That's right. Where did I read that this morning?
Twitter. That's all you ever read.
No, it was an article. It was like a full with full sentences, more than just 140 characters.
I don't know people read those anymore.
Yeah, I know.
No, Drew actually has many leather bound books.
Yes, you know what? Was it Elliot Friedman's 30 Thoughts? It
no.
might have been Elliot Friedman's 30
that,
Thoughts.
So.
Didn't he only have 29? Like he just couldn't think of a 30th. And no. This week was only 29 thoughts.
Yeah, he should have like 28 thoughts one week, 27 another
just
week.
Diminishing returns is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, so you got Kunitz and Crosby. And we asked Kelly Rudy, and he said, you know, he thought Stamkos or Carter. So, you know, let's go through the lines. Richie, I'll start with you. How do you see this playing out?
I see Carter fitting in there better than Stamkos, because Stamkos, to me, I've said this on the show many times, is such a great shot. But when you're playing on your strong side there, and Stamkos usually plays center, when you're playing on your strong side then, St. Louis usually plays on his right side, but back to what I was saying, when you're playing on your strong side, the one-timers and the opportunities, unless you have a ton of movement up front, are more difficult. So I don't see him playing there. I see Carter playing there.
Explain the strong side argument versus the, you know, regarding Stamkos and Carter. Explain that a little bit more for somebody who might not understand what you're saying.
Well, Carter's got a really good shot, but Carter's got a nice shot. You know, he catches and he shoots. He's got a great wrist shot. Stamkos is a great everything shot. But the point is that Stamkos likes to kind of cut into the middle sometimes, find open space, kind of like Brett Hull. Better skater, though. And he likes to sometimes come from the left to the right. And if you're on the right side, your angles are all changed. So I don't see Stamkos playing there. I may very well be wrong, but I see Carter fitting in as a better suited winger for that line. And I see it being Kunitz, Crosby, and Carter as line one.
If Stamkos likes to cut him in from the left side, should he be playing left wing?
Yeah, I think he should. Or center. Either one, but I think he's not going to play center, so I think left side, yeah.
Because, you know, like you said, his angles aren't any different, whereas if he's coming down the right side, he's coming in sort of on his backhand almost more so.
Yeah, I think so, and it'd be interesting to see then where he slots in. Because then if you look at, I mean, as he'll give his lines after, so I'll go now. When you look at a guy like, do you want him with a guy like Taves, or is that kind of a different style? That could work. I see, you know, Taves and Sharp. Taves, Sharp, and Nash seems like a line that might work. Sharp on the left there, Nash on the right.
My lines aren't going to be very different than yours, Richie.
Yeah, and then I like to put Stam, maybe, see, I had Ben beside Getzlaff and Perry, because I think that'd be a really nice fit, but then where's Stamkos playing? Unless you're rolling four lines, is it going to be Stamkos, Bergeron, and Duchesne? it's so Stamkos kind of is maybe a tweener there. Maybe what they do is they try and they put Stamkos on the left side with Getzlaff and Perry, because those guys, Getzlaff can find that open guy better than probably, well, as well as anybody can in the league. And maybe you drop Ben down to a guy like Bergeron, ease him into the tournament a little bit more.
Well, that's not a checking line, quote unquote, yeah. If it's Stamkos, Getzlaff, and Perry.
Where are you playing Duchesne, I guess, is the other question. I think Duchesne probably ends up being, him or Ben probably ends up being one of your extras.
You got to keep in mind, and
I've gone over this so many times. It's hard to figure it out.
Oh, it's fascinating. Jamie Benn wasn't invited. Was the only player we should mention that wasn't invited to the Team Canada orientation camp. Doesn't necessarily mean that he won't. That doesn't necessarily mean he'll be one of the extra forwards.
No,
but there's a good chance. Okay.
There's
well,
two
I'll,
of them.
I'll give. I'll
I
give,
didn't say Tavares yet.
Well, I'll give my lines. Tavares to me.
There's only one extra forward.
There's two.
Well, no,
you play 13 forwards.
No, but there's two extra forwards.
We're talking
on the
about
team.
The lines.
Okay,
right.
Yes, right.
So, I mean, right now, to me, the big question mark is out of John Tavares and Patrice Bergeron, which one of those guys is playing wing? Or are you going to have both of those guys at center?
Tavares playing wing, I think.
Because you can't have Bergeron. And
or maybe. First off, sorry to interrupt, Desi, but what you do is Bergeron plays center defensively, and then on the left side of the ice, Tavares takes all the draws, and the right side of the ice, Bergeron takes all the draws.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if Bergeron, I mean, I don't know that Bergeron's necessarily going to play a regular shift.
Absolutely has to.
He should be.
Patrice Bergeron, and again, this is unbiased, because you guys know, I'm a Devils fan at heart, and then probably second to Jets fan. Patrice Bergeron's one of the best two-way centers in the NHL, entire game. He's dominant, and that he was a huge part of why they won the Cup when they did. He's not going to be a passenger on this team. Now, I don't think anybody's going to be a passenger on this team, but I do think he'll take a regular shift, and I think he has to be. I think he will rotate in and out of that fourth line. He's got to be the fourth line center, and he'll play penalty kill and all that. So when I look at the lines, I think, to me, where the trouble lies, Drew, is Tavares has got to play left wing, because a lot of people earlier on in the year had Getzlaff playing wing. Getzlaff and Perry have to play together.
Yeah.
Getzlaff and Perry, we talked about this, was it 2 or 3 weeks ago? If you watch the Anaheim Ducks right now, Dustin Penner, Ryan Getzlaff, and Corey Perry is the most dominant line in the NHL, in my opinion. You put those guys out there, and I don't think the big ice affects their game at all. I think those guys are punishing, and they're good offensively. Perry's one of the best snipers in the game. You leave those guys together. Either put Jamie Benn or John Tavares on the left side. I agree with Richie. I think first line you got Kunitz, Crosby, and Carter, or if you maybe want to put Nash on that top line. The problem for me lies in breaking up those pairs, because everybody expects Kunitz and Crosby to get together, Getzlaff and Perry, and then probably Sharp and Taves. And to me, you might put Tavares, if Ben's on the second line, you might put him on the third line, and then maybe you move Sharp down, and then your checking line, if you want to call it a checking line, is Patrick Sharp, Patrice Bergeron, and then maybe Rick Nash.
Is Sharp playing left wing or right wing in your opinion?
Originally, I'm a right wing. I mean, he plays left wing too. I think based on kind of the way that the team is set up, they may want to make him play the right side. It's going to be difficult though, because I mean, if you look at the right side, Drew, you have Carter,
mm-hmm.
you have Nash, and again, I think you have Perry there. So that's why I think Sharp fits in, because who else is playing right wing?
Yeah, and that's
putting Duchesne on the left side as well then.
Well, I mean, you're playing Duchesne on the right side? When's Duchesne ever play on the right side?
See, to me, and again, I'm not singling him out here because he's on the team. You mentioned that they're going to dress 13 forwards. I think Matt Duchesne is one of those guys that might not dress, to me. If you're talking about what guy's not going to dress for the most part, to me, it's maybe Duchesne and Marleau. Those are my two guys. Not saying that that's going to happen. That's just my feeling. I think we'd all agree that Crosby, Getzlaf, Taves, there's certain guys that aren't going to sit. And they're going to have to do that, Richie. But I think the problem lies in those centers having to play wing. And that's probably why Eric Staal and Mike Richards didn't make the team.
That's exactly right.
And that's why they took Rick Nash, Jeff Carter, two natural right wingers.
These are how, at the end of the day, I'd probably start off game one. Again, my personal opinion. I'd start off Kunitz, Crosby, Carter. I'd be surprised at Kunitz and Carter being there, but I think both underrated players. Second line, I have Stamkos on the left side of Taves and Sharp. I have Sharp on the right side. I'd have Tavares on the left side of Getzlaf and Perry. I'd have Ben and Bergeron in the middle. Ben on the left side, Bergeron in the middle, and Nash on the right side. Duchesne is my extra, and Marleau is my extra.
Yep.
But I think that Duchesne, Ben, and Marleau all play the left wing, and you could see a rotation of those guys, plus one of those guys would be a scratch. That's what I would guess would be the opening night lineup. Lines if I were doing it.
It's tough to argue with that. Richie was the one that had the he was clairvoyant in seeing that Jeff Carter was going to be picked to the team.
Well, I thought he should be picked to the team. This is the thing, like Carter on the right side helps, right? Perry on the right side.
It really does.
I just think Sharp is better player on the right side in terms of his skill type.
Yep.
Better suited to the right side on this team in terms of skill than is Stamkos, and I may very well prove to be wrong.
We talked about lines already. Is Jeff Carter, I mean, and I have no real big problem with Jeff Carter on the team. The guy who I thought would who I liked on the team and didn't really have a sniff, or he had a sniff, but not really a lot talked about, was James Neal.
Yeah, I mean, he would have fit in terms of
They just think Kunitz, Crosby, and Neal?
Because Crosby plays better with Malkin than he does with.
Neal doesn't play on that line, Drew, right. But it's a good point.
But they play on the same team. Yeah,
look at goal scores.
They don't play together, so.
I know.
Look at those goal scores over the last 3 or 4 years. Neal's third or fourth. I mean, he's a sniper, and he missed a little bit of time this year, but he's still over a point a game.
Well over a point a game.
He had 5 points, was it last week, in a game. So, no, I mean, James Neal definitely deserved to be in the conversation. But when you have those natural right wingers, those scorers like Corey Perry and Jeff Carter, then all of a sudden James Neal gets squeezed out. It's that numbers game again. But I think to Richie's point, and I think Richie is bang on with those forward lines, I think those forward lines are going to change a lot. You're going to see Kunitz and Crosby play together sometimes. And then maybe the next game they don't play together. You'll see Sharp and Taves play together some games, and then you won't see them play together. You'll see Getzlaf and Perry out there together. Other games you won't. I think I'm becoming a bit of a parrot and repetitive here, but I think the lines will change. They're very fluid, and that's a good thing. And I think you run into trouble when you keep trying to go out with the same lines, but not in saying that there will be problems, but I don't think everyone's expecting Canada to win every game 5-0 and everything is going to go hunky-dory.
Canada's got two byes to start the tournament.
But you know, Drew, they always take a while. They're going to play. You have to fly. They're chartering a plane right to Sochi, but they still have to go right away and then get into the tournament.
Don't ever underestimate those Norwegians.
Yeah, the other thing is, you know, we talked about Getzlaf. Getzlaf's never been a great face-off guy. He's not having another good face-off year. He's not a good face-off guy. Tavares also isn't having a great face-off year. You wonder if they split him in terms of what we were saying before, one on the right side, one on the left side. That might help in terms of the face-off efficiency.
Well, every key face-off, Bergeron's going to be on the ice for it.
Yeah, but it's a harder draw for him on the left side than the right
side. I get it. I'm just saying.
Taves is an excellent face-off guy. Getzlaf is a good face-off guy.
But I mean, Bergeron's the best face-off guy in the NHL.
Yep.
Statistically. Mm-hmm. That's part of the reason he's on this team over Mike Richards, for example.
He's better than Mike Richards.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly is an aspect, too. But
that's an
aspect
of why he's better, but he's better. Yeah. And Vitrich can win faceoffs, too, but Bergeron's the better player.
Yeah, best
I had Mike Richards on my team.
So did I.
I mean, we don't want to go over this again.
I had Richards
again,
on my team
but
as well.
Richards on the team because
you
all...
You had Brad Richards, though, Drew.
No, I didn't.
All Mike Richards does is win at every single level, and if you need a goal, he'll do whatever it takes. He'll crash and bang. He'll find a way to put the puck in the net if it's off of his head. So, I mean, it's again, I think he could be a guy that's considered as one. If they lose a gritty guy, let's say, you know, Bergeron goes out. I'm not saying he's going to be the first guy.
That's the only guy I think they would consider replacing him for.
Yeah. So, there's just so many good players. We've all seen those Canada B teams. The Canada B team could possibly beat the Canada A team.
Wouldn't be shocking. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the back end and look at the defense. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Reminder, Saturday afternoon, 12 noon, the usual start time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll get you set up for the Jets and the Blue Jackets later on that evening.
Remus better play some Bruce Springsteen. Richie gets very upset when he doesn't get his Bruce Springsteen.
New album, January 14th.
Meh.
Let's get some high hopes.
Are you taking Friday off work, Richard? They're having
I already pre-bought the album.
Okay, but there's
an interview with him at, I think, at 11 or 10 o'clock.
I think 10:30, if I'm not mistaken.
Does anybody still download MP3s off of Napster, or is that not cool anymore?
Remus, do you do that?
I buy them on iTunes and Amazon.
That's a good thing.
I already pre-bought the album.
There you go. You're a big Bruce fan. Have you... Have any success in getting him into Winnipeg for this coming summer yet?
Rumors is coming in July, but we'll see.
You're very excited about that potential rumor, undoubtedly.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, let's focus our attention to the defense of Team Canada. And this was obviously the less controversial of the two groups, or three groups, but goaltending really wasn't at all controversial. Dan Hamhuis is a name that, I mean, it seems like he's strictly making the team because he's a left-handed shot.
And a great defenseman. We talked about this.
Is he a great defenseman?
Defensive defenseman, yes. Yes, he is. In 2011...
He's good. He's not great.
In 2011, when the Vancouver Canucks went to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Boston Bruins, Dan Hamhuis was excellent and was arguably their best defenseman. One of the best defensemen. And he makes this team... Yes, sure. Because, Richie, they need a left-shot defenseman. He's most likely going to be an extra. He might be, probably the seventh or eighth defenseman.
Right.
But Dan Hamhuis is extremely responsible defensively. And, you know, when we were going over all of the teams in the NHL, I still think Vancouver is a top 10 defensive team. And, you know, Richie and I have
gone... Not last night.
We've gone... Yeah, not last night. Torts looked like he was having a conniption. But, you know, Kevin Bieksa, Richie and I disagree. I still think Kevin Bieksa is an excellent defenseman. Maybe he's not as good as he was 4 years ago. But I still think, you know, anyways, I don't want to go on and on about the Vancouver Canucks. But Dan Hamhuis...
John Cherry, how'd you get in here?
Yeah, he loves Bieksa. But he calls him Bieska.
Bieksa, yeah.
But Dan Hamhuis gets there on his merits. He's a good defenseman, and he's not a 50-point defenseman. But he's there because, let's say they're playing the Russians, and they're deciding whether or not to put in... Who's going to be the extra defenseman? And I think it's pretty ridiculous that P.K. Subban might be an extra defenseman because he's excellent. I don't think he should be, but he might be. Let's say that they're going in between Subban and Hamhuis, Drew.
Yeah.
Okay? Subban, I think we'd all agree, is probably, with the exception of maybe Doughty, the best offensive defenseman that Canada has.
Eric Karlsson.
Keith.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just on Canadian.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
So let's say that they're playing, again, I keep bringing up the Russians. Or let's say another offensively talented team like the Swedes. And they think about this stuff, as Richie mentioned.
For sure.
They have playbooks on every player. So you put Dan Hamhuis out there because you want a responsible defenseman to shut down the Ovechkin-Kovalchuk line. So that's why I think he's on the team. He's there to be a responsible defensive defenseman. And he's not flashy, but he definitely deserves to make the team. It's not a controversy. Sometimes they just want a specialist. He's a specialist. He's a defensive defenseman.
Talk about pairs. Dan Hamhuis, it appears what they're going to try and do is reunite Duncan Keith and Drew Doughty. That's what I would do. Pietrangelo and Bomeister already play together, so there you go right there.
Is it Vlasic Weber?
I think it's probably Vlasic Weber is, but where did Dan Hamu start his career?
Nashville.
And where's Shea Weber play?
Again.
Nashville.
See, Richie's always ahead of the curve. Richie's always thinking two steps ahead of us, Drew. We can't do anything about that.
Five seasons together, guys. And I don't remember, you know, how often they played together. I know Ryan Suter was playing with Weber for periods of time there, but Hamus is a left-side defenseman, so him and Shea Weber certainly played together for periods of time over the five-year tenure of his time in Nashville. I think that's probably another factor, too, that plays into this. So maybe Hamus plays a little bit more of a considerable role than you would think.
Right, and then if Hamus, as you mentioned, Richie, because of the history with
the
Nashville, if Hamus is with Weber, and then we all believe that Bouwmeester is with Peter Angelo,
right. Mm-hmm.
Then the odd man out are Subban and Vlasic.
Yeah.
And I think you'd agree that Vlasic, again, is more of a defensive defenseman. He's got offensive talent. And Kelly Rudy mentioned him. You know, Vlasic, you watch the San Jose Sharks, he's unbelievable.
But he was coming up as he came up primed to be that 50-point guy. He's not that guy. He's a stay-at-home guy who can move the puck, can get the shot through, can do a lot of things. He's kind of like Hamus in that way. They can contribute 30 to 35 points. They have talent, but they're not going to be the offensive dynamos. And the team doesn't need them to be offensive dynamos.
I think Subban is the seventh defenseman, and he comes in on the power play, and he subs in... where he needs to, either on the right side or the left side. He's a natural right side guy, but I think the odd man out, for the most part, this is just, again, you know, an opinion, I think the odd man out will be Vlasic or Hamhuis. And I think that's probably safe to say, just because Keith, Doughty, Weber, Petrangelo, those are your top guys. Bouwmeester could throw in there. So I don't think anybody's expecting Bouwmeester to have problems because he's one of the best skaters in the world.
People need to realize also that these guys are used to playing 25 minutes a game, and there's only 60 minutes in a hockey game. So what likely will happen is they'll ride Keith and Doughty 20 minutes a game, maybe not 25 originally. They will ride those guys hard later in the tournament, I bet you. But this, with the travel and all, they're getting used to getting acclimated to the weather, the surroundings. What they will do is they'll probably play these guys 20 minutes a game, and maybe they'll disperse it that way, 20-20-20 kind of thing. I don't know. See how they're going to do it. But the idea is, eventually, we're talking about some of these guys aren't going to be playing the big minutes that they're used to. And they have to adjust to that. Because you don't want to have six guys adjust to playing less. You'd rather have two guys adjust to playing less, and the other guys play their usual time.
But not to burn them out too early in the tournament.
You will see their ice time go up, I bet.
Well, sure.
Might not be by minutes, but by a couple shifts, I bet.
Well, as the competition gets stiffer, I mean,
well, the games are more important. Yeah,
Norway and Austria to start. They're not exhibition. I don't want to be disrespectful to those countries, but
I mean, you know, we could state there's a significant importance in those games. But you saw what Canada did in 2010, and they had to actually play an extra game, and it might have helped them. So you don't know.
And I think that's going back to the pairings. If you're talking about PK Subban, who we all agreed should have been a lock, but apparently he wasn't a lock. Well, I don't know how the last year's Norris Trophy winner isn't a lock. But let's say that he is the seventh defenseman, or let's just say that there was concerns of putting him on the team. If you look at the guys that they're going to put on in the power play, Keith and Doughty, you might keep that pair together. You might put Shea Weber out there on a regular shift. Petrangelo and Bouwmeester, to me, those are your penalty killer guys as far as defensemen go. So then Subban, that's where he gets that increased ice time.
Right.
You put him out on the power play maybe as a right shot, or maybe you have two right shots with him and Weber, two really good point shots.
Which you can do on the power play.
So Subban, I think, is the guy that kind of makes up for maybe people were a little bit, I guess, concerned that they took too many left-side defensive defensemen, Vlasic, Hamhuis. But the problem is the solution to that is, well, you got Subban out there, put him on the right side, put him on the left side. These guys will adapt in a short tournament.
I mean,
so I think this defense is easily the best in the tournament.
There's three guys who won't get a sniff on the power play, and the three of them are left-side guys. Because the power play, you don't have to worry that as much about that based on your setup. Bouwmeester, it's not going to get a sniff on the power play as far as I'm concerned. Vlasic and Hamhuis won't get a sniff. So then you're down to five defensemen that you're apportioning power play time to, and it very well may be the case that one of those guys isn't dressed, although I assume they probably all will be, and one of those left side guys won't be dressed. So then you're looking at Keith, Doughty, Petrangelo, Weber, and Subban.
What?
So who do you kick out of that group? Keith is your only left side guy, and he's great, so he's going to be there. You have Doughty, who's a dynamic offensive player. He's going to be there. Subban's a dynamic offensive player. He's going to be there. And then you have Weber, and then you have Petrangelo. And Petrangelo's a great offensive defenseman, guys. I mean, he's a great offensive defenseman. But I think Ezzie may be right with Weber's booming shot. He might be the odd man out in that rotation, and then they can ride him harder on the PK if they want to.
Yeah, and a guy like Ryan Getzlaff plays the point on the power play but for Anaheim, there, so yeah. So maybe they go with Getzlaff. Who knows?
They won't, I mean, I don't think they'll that's a good point about the point like that. No pun intended. But I don't think they risk on this team risk having a forward back there for the for the shorthanded goal.
Well, it's not like that guy. I mean, the difference between that guy and the defenseman that would be back isn't that significant.
Yeah.
Quickly, goaltenders. I mean, you know, they sort of chalk.
Luongo game one, and then Price game two, and game three will be the one against Finland that really matters.
Yeah, and they've done that. That's kind of the Canadian way of doing things. Mm-hmm. Marty Brodeur with Cujo, Luongo with Brodeur. So I think Carey Price eventually emerges as the number one goalie.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to some of Canada's rivals for the gold medal. Who can compete with Team Canada for gold in the Sochi Olympics? You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
So you were playing a different song over top
he was, yeah.
Bruce song, and well, you made you redeemed yourself because it was getting a little hairy here for a couple of seconds there, but you pulled it off there, Remus. So we have high hopes for you still.
Reem, was that Ugly Kid Joe?
Yeah, it was programmed into the computer. I forgot to skip it, but yes, that was Ugly Kid Joe. I hate everything about you.
Little Remus mashup.
It's terrible.
This is actually a cover. This is not a Bruce original.
No, but it's the one that's already been released, right? It's been released for a while ahead of official
the title track, Drew.
I know.
I love this song. Great song. I got to say again, Richie got me into Bruce Springsteen. We saw him in Minneapolis. Unbelievable concert. The Boss.
Oh, he's the best concert you ever see. No
gold
question,
medal
no
threats.
About it.
Team Canada. I mean, we assume it's our natural birthright to win gold every single time that we gather for an international tournament, whether it be at the World Juniors, whether it be at the World Hockey Championships, whether it be at the Olympics, whether it be at the Spengler Cup.
Don't forget about sledge hockey.
Whether it be the sledge hockey players, yes, of course.
Well, every game's at 11 a.m. here, by the way.
Yes.
In the qualification round.
So
that's when Remus gets up.
Which is odd because he's on with Rick already.
That's when the rolling around table starts. Yeah, that's when I wake up.
I thought you just had like a little cot and you just roll right out of the cot. Really,
I wish it'd make my life a lot easier.
Yes. So the first game is Thursday, February 13th. They play Norway. That'll be at 11 o'clock start time, local time here. Then they play the Friday. That'll be against Austria. Then the important game for Team Canada. The one that'll determine if they can skip.
Austria's in the tournament?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
If they can.
Thomas Vanek.
That the game against Finland. Assuming they beat Finland on Sunday, February the 16th, they'll be able to skip the qualification playoff and they'll immediately be into the quarterfinals with a favorable draw. And that's where the real tournament sort of gets underway. Who are your top three threats, Team Canada?
You know, I've given all these rosters a look over and. I'd have to rank the three threats. Everybody thinks Russia's the biggest threat, and Russia playing at home with the pressure. I just don't think Russia's defense makes them the biggest threat. I think the biggest threat to Team Canada, probably consistent if, you know, guys who know me, I think Sweden's the biggest threat to Team Canada. I think Sweden, the ability of their offense to control the puck, the mix of, just really great skill and good puck possession, as they call it, although every team in this tournament can possess the puck, so I'm not so sure how much weight that has. Their defense, I think, is really deep. I think you have talent in Ekman Larsson and Cronwall and Carlson. I like the way that team is built, and then you have Henrik Lundqvist in the middle, in net, and whether or not he's had a great year or whatever, maybe the guy almost single-handedly won the Olympics in 2006. It's a great goaltender. He's intense and calm under pressure. Sweden, to me, is the favorite. It would be the biggest threat to Team Canada. I think the second team is the Russians because of the firepower, because of Kovalchuk and Malkin and Ovechkin. Playing at home, the crowd, the international ice, the KHL guys probably have the advantage of the familiarity. I think Russia's two. And I think three, no disrespect to Finland, who I think is a very good team, is the U.S., and the U.S. has, you know, kind of a grinding team. There's skill for sure, and there's speed, but not the fastest team. And they're going to rely a lot on Ryan Suter and a lot on their goaltender, Jonathan Quick, who's a tremendous goaltender. But I just think the U.S., talent-wise up front, if the U.S. gets down like they did to Team Canada 2-0 in the finals in Vancouver, I don't know if they'll be able to replicate that kind of a comeback.
You know, you talk about Team Canada and Team USA. Victor Hedman did not make Team Sweden. Sweden's defense is incredible. And when you have a guy like Victor Hedman that doesn't make the team, he was disappointed.
He was.
You know, he didn't get a lot of airtime or, I guess, press, if you want to call it that. But, you know, he was a guy that expected to make the team. As Richie mentioned, you have so many guys, Carlson and Ekman-Larsson. Those are two of the greatest defensemen in the league right now.
Let me just interrupt you for 2 seconds. If Toby Enstrom had not withdrawn his name,
I don't think he makes the team.
Does he make that team?
Well, that's a good question, Drew. I mean, let's go over it. Edler's going to make it over him. Ekman-Larsson will make it over him. Chalmerson, based on his ability to lock down, will make it over him. Carlson will make it over him. And Nicholas Cronwall will make
Maybe
it over
Talander.
Him. So your next question is Talander, who doesn't skate well, so I'm surprised they brought him, but I think it's a veteran presence who might be their depth guy just to support these guys. And he adds size to the back end, although they're pretty big. Jonathan Erickson and Johnny Oduya. It's a good question, because if Hedman didn't make it, I mean, Hedman would be ahead of Enstrom, so if Hedman didn't make it over one of these guys, I don't think Enstrom would have made it.
Yeah, and this team, start off with the Sedins, look over to Zetterberg. I mean, you go up and down the roster there. Sweden's pretty good, so I'll still say Russia is the biggest threat, but I don't disagree with Richie's three teams there. I think the biggest threats are Sweden, Russia, and the Americans. And Russia, I agree. I think there's question marks for me. Bobrovsky, you know, will most likely be the starter there. But you look at the defense, and guys like Markov are slowing down. They have other guys on the team that are – it's a pretty slow defense, but the forwards are extremely scary. And you've got guys that are playing in the Continental Hockey League – Ilya Kovalchuk, Datsyuk, Ovechkin, you go up and down the roster. Yeah.
Their best defenseman is Slava Voynov, and he's a great defenseman. But then you're looking at, you know, guys like, as you said, Markov, who's steps slower than he once was. Emelin, who's struggled after that initial, I thought, rush of good play after his injury, big injury. Then you got Anton Belov and Fedor Tuten and Nikita Nikitin. I mean, you're talking about guys who aren't cracking the top pairing of any good team in the National Hockey League.
It's a pretty slow defense, with the exception of maybe Voynov, as you mentioned, who is an excellent defenseman for LA. But yeah, to me, it's all about what they bring offensively. And I think with the home crowd and the pressure that's going to be on them, I think, and this is, again, I mean, maybe this is the dreamer in me, I do think we will see a Canada-Russia final.
This is the problem you have if you're Russia. And I mean, that the intensity of Canada-US last term, I think paled in comparison to the initial intensity of the Canada-Russia game, you know, because Russia was seen as the biggest threat. Strategy-wise, if you get the puck in deep on the Russians, are their defensemen good enough to handle the Canadian forwards, Swedish forwards, American forwards, whatever the breakdown is of the draws? I don't think so. So then what you need is you need your forwards to be able to support defensively, and that's when you get to situations where you have Ovechkin doesn't play well defensively. Kovalchuk certainly ignores defense on many occasions. Guys like Nikushkin, so young and you know, inexperienced in that regard. Not a lot of guys are like Pavel Datsyuk. So can their forwards support defensively when their defensemen aren't able to handle the other team's best forwards?
You know, a guy like Pavel Datsyuk can. But can the rest of the team?
Yeah, that's right.
And that's a scary thing. And that's why I imagine, Richie, you picked the Swedes as the biggest. You know, props to Sweden. 2006 gold medal champions. You know, they won World Juniors. Like, you know, their hockey program right now is looking better maybe than it's ever looked. So Sweden is absolutely a hockey superpower right now. And that team scares me absolutely. Remember in 2002 when Canada lost to Sweden, Sundin had those goals. Sweden's always been dangerous. So I think you're still going to have those four teams, and then you start to bring in, you know, Czech Republic. The fact that Peter Nedved made the team over Yuri Hudler and Radim Verbata is mind-boggling. I honest to God didn't think Nedved was still playing pro hockey.
Was Oleg Tavernovsky on the Russian team? can we just list off random 1990s players? Because
Denis Grabushkov, I'm surprised he didn't make it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's been awful for Edmonton.
I honestly thought it was like his son or something.
No. To be honest, I wasn't surprised. I've been playing as Peter Nedved for years. I play as the Czech Super League in
yeah, you play in the Czech Super Liga, not in the Olympics.
Yeah, sorry, Czech Extra Liga and NHL on Xbox.
Did you see who's on Team Latvia? Talk about those Hasi.
Stanis Ozolinč.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Who was he traded for in that trade from Colorado to San Jose? San Jose to Colorado, excuse
Rob
me.
Rob Blake?
No. So that's when they won the Cup in 96, the big trade.
Oh, Richie.
No, Owen Nolan.
Owen Nolan, yeah. A lot has happened, Richie, since 1996.
We can point to Remus like Nolan pointed to Hasek to get us off the air here.
In the All-Star game. That's it for NHL Midweek on this Wednesday evening on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Hockey Night in Canada's Kelly Rudy for having joined us. In case you missed any of that interview or any of the show altogether, we'll be available on iTunes on tsn1290.ca and on our website, illegalcurve.com. We remind you to follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Saturday, 12 noon, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on this fine radio station. For producer Michael Remus and my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell, and we remind you that if it's Wednesday, it's NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.